From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
More bombs were apparently discovered between Thursday and early Friday, including one intended for the former Vice President Joe Biden and another for actor Robert De Niro. There's a report that the Postal Service indicates some packages were mailed from Florida. We discussed with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer at Moscow State University, what these reports look like from Russia.
Well, Mark, the big story here is all about these, I think they're up to 11 pipe bombs now, that aren't really bombs because I heard this morning they don't really have detonation, you know, triggers, but that were sent to Democratic politicians and anti-Trump Hollywood types. Curious about what that the optics are in Moscow over all of this.
What? Did you say anthrax scare?
No, right.
I just had this flash of deja vu.
Me too, actually.
I mean, a bunch of fake pipe bombs get sent to. I think first it was politicians and figures on one side of the aisle, including George Soros, and then the next day it was some on the other side of the aisle, and we're not paying any attention. The usual U.S. domestic hysteria.
They're blaming it on Russia. They started that this morning. MSNBC said, hey, wait a minute, maybe Russia did it.
Some complete retard at Chuck Todd just speculates out of everything that, I mean, sure. I mean, Russia's doing everything else. Why not fake mail bombs too? It could be a Russian operation. What? Why not? Right?
Right. So could Berman.
More say. Russia.
Right. Right. Yeah, so, but meanwhile, we've got some actual serious business going on, you know, and this kind of thing. You know, you remember the anthrax stuff came at the same time that they were implementing the USA Patriot Act. It was kind of the icing on the cake of the 9/11 airplane crashes. And so who knows what goes with this, but the INF treaty being abrogated by the U.S. while they blame Russia for abrogating it is a little more troubling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is a big deal.
The INF treaty. I said ABM. I meant INF.
INF. Yeah, the ABM treaty was the last treaty that the U.S. unilaterally pulled on.
George Bush did that one.
Which,
yeah, right?
Yes, in 2001, which very much has had an impact on U.S.-Russia strategic relations and political relations leading up to today. With the Trump administration announced it is moving out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces, the INF treaty. Mm-hmm. I think we should start with a little summary of what that treaty is, because
yeah,
I guess it's already a little old for those of us that have come into fruition after the Cold War ended.
Right.
It was a treaty signed in 1987. Between then President Reagan and Gorbachev, and the goal was to eliminate short and intermediate range nuclear weapons. We're talking it's 500 to 5,500 kilometers, which I guess is like roughly 340 to 3,400 and some miles. That's the range of what we're looking at, and it had some curious limitations, mostly by the technology of the day, but it only banned land-based intermediate range nuclear missiles of those ranges. It did not affect sea, air, or now drone-launched missiles, which is actually kind of crucial to where we get to today with the treaty.
Right.
The goal of the treaty was basically to take nuclear missiles take nuclear missiles out of Europe,
right.
Both sides of Europe, right? Because then Europe, it was a completely different geopolitical context. Europe was divided almost down the middle, and Eastern Europe was members of the Warsaw Pact.
Right.
So there were missiles, intermediate and short range missiles in Europe pointed at each, you know, other sides of Europe, you know, at each other.
Right.
And you know, it's a completely different geopolitical context today. So it was to take, you know, the missiles out of Europe, but also to try to take Europe out of the heavy blows of nuclear conflict.
Right. I mean, just for people to understand, really, I think more accurate, more accurate, but another way of looking at it is the U.S. had the Atlantic Ocean and Western Europe between it and the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union had the Warsaw Pact countries.
On one side of the country.
Right.
Yeah, at least on one. I mean, we have to remember that Alaska is only a few miles away from Russia.
Right.
You know, less than,
right.
But I'm talking that main, on the other side.
The mainland.
But of course, that's the non-strategic side.
Yeah.
And it's much shorter distance over the Arctic, which is where most missiles would actually be fired, not over Europe. But
correct.
So anyway, it did not do anything about long-range nuclear missiles. So those would be limited in number down to an acceptable total to wipe out the world only a couple times each. Start one and start two never took off, but New Start, eventually with Obama, and New Start is also due to expire in 2001, and the Trump administration has already indicated that if it is still in office, that it sees no reason to renew or renegotiate that treaty in any way.
Right.
Which would be the last Cold War era arms control treaty.
Right.
Now, it did not eliminate long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles. It did not outlaw. It did not ban intermediate-range nuclear missiles launched by sea or by air or now by drone. And it did not prevent any other countries other than the U.S. and the Soviet Union, Russia as the legal inheritor, than Russia from owning these intermediate-range nuclear weapons. And one of the misconceptions is that you can always fire a long-range, that is an intercontinental ballistic missile, at a shorter target, right? I mean, you could always do that if you really wanted to. So you could target an intermediate-range, a long-range, an intercontinental ballistic missile at a short or intermediate range if that was your goal. But of course, with also the limitation of the total number of missiles and warheads in the START treaties, the idea was that, you know, you would then try to target them at your main enemy. And this, again, was to try to save Europe. And in the theoretical, the big loser from the U.S., pulling out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty is Europe.
Europe, yeah. Now it's battlefield.
Potentially. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Because the U.S., I mean, other than Alaska, is not threatened by potential Russian intermediate range weapons.
Right.
And Russia is not threatened by U.S. intermediate range land-based, again, weapons, unless they can convince countries in Europe and or Asia, which brings us to another side of the whole thing, to station nuclear weapons on their territory, which would, of course, make them a target of Russian intermediate. And Putin has already said that. If you put, you know, just like in the years leading up to the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, when the U.S. was putting Pershing 2 missiles in Europe, and the U.S.'s first cruise missiles at the time, with potential for nuclear warheads. If you put those missiles there, we will have to target you. It's just strategic.
Right.
It's nothing personal.
Right.
Right. If you're stupid enough to do that, then you become a target.
Right.
So notice that it's both Russia and the U.S. have accused each other of violating this treaty for years. And as it's a guess, right, an educated guess. But as far as I can tell, both countries are violating it in small ways. The U.S. accuses Russia of developing a land-based variant of a legal cruise missile, a sea-launched cruise missile, the Caliber, the one that we saw Russia use to great effect in Syria, firing from as far away as the Caspian. They said they have developed a land-based variant of that, which is designated the 9M729, and that the ranges of this missile fall into the prescribed range of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Russia denies this, not that they have the missile, but that the ranges fall into that prescribed range. The United Russia, meanwhile, first of all, Russia has a very tenuous relationship with the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, because after the United States pulled out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty in 2001 unilaterally, Putin was very clear that, you know, that we don't know that if the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty is any longer in our strategic interests, is it in our national security interests. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people in Moscow, military, political, at the time, who wanted Russia to themselves to immediately pull out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty when George W. Bush pulled out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. Or the reason for this is one of the main reasons for pulling out for the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, other than, you know, to take Europe out of the picture, is because of the response time. Intermediate range missiles fired at each other from Europe and from Western Russia towards Europe would have about an 8-minute window until impact. 8 minutes.
Right.
And when you're talking buildings like Stalin's Seven Sisters, two of which are government buildings,
right.
Others are university, but one of them is the foreign ministry. And if you were at the top of that building,
18
and you were
minutes,
trying,
right?
Yeah, if you were trying to get to the basement, the bunkers underneath, for some modicum of protection, the government built bunkers beneath that building, you might not get there in time. That's how fast those missiles are. So that was one of the main concerns, that these were too dangerous because of the potential for mistakes, mainly. I mean, other than the response time, which would be a great first strike, but capability in some respect. But it reduces the window for decision making, right?
Yes, hair trigger.
Where sometimes both countries received false data, false readings that the other side had launched. This happened several times during the Cold War, right? And they had enough time. Thank God, the world is still here. That on both sides, this occurred where people questioned the positive indication of firing from the other side, and it turned out to be false. With an intermediate range weapons, that window for the decision making, for checking, for making that hard decision, is this real, is it not, was a mistake made, was one launched by a rogue actor, was it a mistake, do we have to go full nuclear, could we do a limited response that would maintain the status quo and save the world, those go out, would have gone out the window with intermediate range weapons from Europe and the Warsaw Pact fired at each other, Western Europe and the Warsaw Pact. In a way, that however is an outdated concern because of the U.S. putting of anti-ballistic missile defense in Europe. Russia has had to develop missiles, weapons that would be able to evade U.S. anti-ballistic missile weapons in Poland, Romania, now in South Korea, in the U.K., sea-based, all around, right? They're trying to stretch a net around Russia and China of anti-ballistic missile defense. No one system, of course, could alleviate, but the idea is to layer and build, have a land-based variant here, a sea-based there, potentially a satellite in the future there, to build and build and build capability and integrate it together until it actually then becomes where it would actually present a real threat to Russia's full-scale strategic deterrent,
right,
and enable a first strike capability. And Russia can't allow that. So they have to develop missiles that evade that. And one of the main ways to do that is with a type of weapon that all of the major great powers, the US, Russia, China, India, the EU, even some other countries are building, is hypersonic weapons.
Right.
And one of the main things of hypersonic weapons, they do several things, but the first one is they move really, really fast.
And hyper
so
fast.
that window that was saved, that time window that was saved by pulling out the intermediate range nuclear forces, that window, is gone now, simply because the U.S. had to respond to maintain the right strategic balance of mutually assured destruction, and Russia was quite clear what the consequences of pulling out of the ABM treaty at the time would be, what they would have to do. And several times along the way, they iterated what we're doing. And yeah, here we are, and Russia is now deploying, the first country to, as far as we know, deploy hypersonic weapons.
Right.
And that window is now gone. So that whole point of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty is non-important. But Russia's primary concern with the U.S., how they say the U.S. is violating it, they talk about three ways, but the most substantial and credible way is that when the U.S. puts these anti-ballistic missile interceptors in Romania, the type of launcher used is the MK-41, which is the same Aegis system that is put aboard U.S. naval ships. I'm familiar with it, having served in the U.S. Navy. And they call it actually the Aegis Ashore system.
Right.
Now, remember again that sea-based missiles were never forbidden by the Intermediate Range Nuclear right Forces Treaty. As well as providing an anti-ship and missile capability, the Aegis can also fire cruise missiles, which means that the Aegis right Ashore system placed in
It's an intermediate range launch. It's an intermediate range launch device, right?
Yeah, it can quickly, according to Russian engineers, be retrofitted for that other purpose and fire cruise missiles, land-based cruise missiles, which would be intermediate range and hence lands-based, fall under the INF treaty, right at Russia.
Right.
And so you not only, did you pull out of the ABM treaty and put up anti-ballistic missile defense threatening our deterrent, but then you get a disguised potential launcher to fire intermediate range missiles, potentially nuclear tipped as well. And Russia said, and Russia's quite right, launchers are also forbidden by that treaty, right? Not just right the intermediate range missiles and their deployment, but the launchers themselves are forbidden. So Russia says that's how the U.S. And the U.S. response to that is never that we couldn't do that, but that we have no missiles there. Well,
right,
that doesn't mean it's not a violation
right
of the treaty.
Yeah, right.
They say, we have no secret missiles in Europe.
Right.
You didn't answer the question, right? How quickly could Gay get there, be shipped there, in a moment of international crisis? Pretty fast, I'm guessing. That's the deal there. So it seems that both countries were violating it
right
in some small, not yet existential ways.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go. Yeah, because I'm just saying maybe the whole architecture that was assembled from like the test ban treaty and the NPT in the 1960s up until the most recent the SALT treaties and all of that kind of outdated for the weaponry
exactly
of today and the strategic position
exactly
today.
All of the old Cold War era treaties, the ABM treaty is gone, the Intermediate Range Forces Treaty, New START, expires and is probably not going to be erued. The conventional armed forces in Europe and the NATO-Russia Founding Act are just being completely ignored at this point. The only reason mm-hmm Russia hasn't pulled out of them is because they haven't had a good idea, a plan B of where to go from there, but they are not being observed in any meaningful way, at least by the United States. So, who has essentially permanently deployed forces right on Russia's border. So all of this Cold War era architecture that set the rules of the game, that made the world a bit safer by providing a modicum of respect, rules of the road, rules of the game, some respect between the two powers, and some predictability, thus providing stability. That's all gone now. And in a way, it's part of new geopolitical realities.
Right.
And in another way, it's part of the advance of technology. But right. To be perfectly honest, I consider the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty archaic. I don't think right. it's such a big deal that the United States has pulled out of it. And I think that the Kremlin says the world is being made more dangerous, the U.S. is pulling out of another treaty, but I think that they are secretly not entirely displeased to see the U.S. do this and take the political heat for unilaterally pulling out of yet another major international treaty. And the real reason – you notice that it's not Europe that is complaining about Russia's supposed violation of this treaty.
Right.
It's not Europe, the ones who have the most to lose, that is demanding that Russia – they're not even demanding that Russia really respect the treaty. We haven't heard any loud voices of that. They yeah. haven't called for negotiations.
No, they've been like Trump bashing and saying, this is dangerous.
It's dangerous because if it's being violated – again, it's probably by both sides and in not really a major way. Here's the real reason the U.S. wants out of this treaty: China.
Yeah.
It's about China, because China is not like Europe and other major countries, and we're in a multipolar world now with great powers, is not a party of this treaty. And some 90% of China's missiles would fall within the range of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Not only, the nuclear ones, of course, but, the U.S. is looking
right.
All these people keep saying this, this Thucydides trap that, a war with China and the U.S. and the Pacific is inevitable. Well, yeah, if you keep running naval parades right along the Chinese coast and the Taiwan Strait, yeah, I guess you are making it somewhat inevitable, on the other side of the world from the United States, claiming freedom of navigation. The only country that has threatened navigation blockades or interdictions in the past few years has been the United States.
Always,
certainly
right.
hasn't been China. China depends on global trade. They need free trade coming in and out of their country in order to make their economy work, grow their economy in order to provide political stability. They have in no way, shape, or form ever threatened freedom of movement. It just becomes an excuse for saber rattling and show of force, and to assert U.S. gunboat diplomacy again,
right.
which China has a bad memory of. But anyway, so China has developed a lot of missiles, right, that in a potential conflict with the U.S. in the South China Sea, over Taiwan, something like that, the U.S. tries to stick its big, powerful navy and aircraft carriers off of China's coast, and China unleashes a hailstorm of missiles now. And the U.S. is really upset about this.
And on Okinawa, South Korea, Guam,
Yes. Yeah. And also there's a bit of the politics of the different military services and all of this. Sea and air-based, drone launched as well, nuclear missiles and nuclear missiles, of course, are not prohibited by this treaty. So the Navy and the Air Force already right. still have that credible deterrent and capability, but the Army doesn't. And the Army wants to get involved in this build up, this containment, this potential future war with China, because they're largely kind of left out of it, because it would mostly at this point be a naval and air thing. So they want land-based missiles put in Guam and Japan and elsewhere in the Pacific so they can get in on this game and, of course, get in on the gravy train, the money that comes with it. It's this weird U.S. interagency military branch rivalry there. So this – and you notice that Trump, Bolton, multiple times when they are talking about why they're getting rid of this treaty, they mention Russia and its violations. But then in the next breath, they mention China, and you see where the real intent is there.
Sure. Right.
Now, I think that this is actually an opportunity, if it was taken, and I don't think necessarily – I'm not saying that the Trump administration means to. It would be nice, but with the neocons, I don't see it. But maybe with the next administration, an opportunity here to recraft a modern arms control treaty that would be truly international and global, that would bring China into it, that would bring the UK and France.
You know, you say that, and I was, the first thing I was thinking of was Trump's negotiating strategy towards North Korea. And I was wondering if this was.
That's why I say I don't think, it's bluff, right? Bluff, bluster. It could be. It could be. I Bolton, I don't think. He seems to be driving a lot right now. He's driving this one. I don't think that's his intentions. But even if the Trump administration doesn't, if we make that assumption, whether it's true or not, certainly the next president, and that's only a couple years away, and it would be an arms control treaty for a truly multipolar world, reflecting geopolitical realities.
Right.
Reflecting multiple power centers, U.S., Russia, China, EU, the U.K., India, potentially South Korea, Japan.
On that, I'm thinking, for example, the last administration created, in essence, a strategic partnership between Russia and China. And if you were to renegotiate the existing architecture into something modern in terms of arms control and bring China into it, there are, moves that the U.S. can make towards China that where China's interests might diverge a little from Russia's, the same with Russia to China. In other words, you can maybe spin a little multipolarity out of this thing just by its nature.
And not only restore a modicum of peace with Russia, but also do a lot towards lowering tensions, these growing tensions that everyone keeps talking about with the U.S. and China, which I think might potentially be even more important. And let's not only include land-based intermediate. Let's talk about sea, air, and drone launch ones.
And defensive.
Let's talk about hypersonic weapons. Let's talk about
satellites, defense,
and sentient killing machines, AIs, which are right around the corner. Let's talk about hypersonic glide vehicles. Why don't we talk about cyber warfare while we're at it?
Could we talk about disarmament at some point?
Let's not go too far. That's not going crazy.
Because we got that NPT, but we also have we're supposed to be moving towards nuclear disarmament.
That has never been observed. Never.
Was negotiated, signed, approved, and all of that. But I'm wondering if maybe it's almost time. I mean, a lot of what Trump has been doing has been what Montero calls it, like imperial retreat or whatever, like trying to drop the overhead on the military, basically.
Retrenchment. Yeah.
And so, if there's a natural tendency towards that or an appropriate move towards that for economic reasons, well, wouldn't this process be a place to, sort of build that in?
Yeah, let me be perfectly honest. Russia is never going to give up its nuclear deterrent because it needs it in a world where the U.S. is still far more conventionally powerful and able to overthrow governments at will. Russia is highly dependent. I mean, Russia's, the modernized military, they can play the game now in small ways, a short distance from their borders, Syria and the near abroad, right?
The U.S. has military bases. The U.S. has military bases all across Russia's borders, and Russia does not have military bases across the U.S.'s borders. And so the counter move to that is nuclear weapons. You come into our country, we're going to blow up yours. And so they need it.
Russia, Putin made clear that Russia does not have a first strike policy with nuclear weapons, unlike the United States, that they will not fire nuclear weapons unless nuclear weapons are fired on by them, which actually caused me to shake my head a little bit. But it was really
He's basically saying, if you guys come in here, we're going to all the street signs are going to point towards Stalingrad.
That's what I would say.
Well, all
I,
the street signs point towards Stalingrad. We got to stop. We're out of time, Mark.
Okay.
So thanks a lot. We'll speak with you again next week. Sorry we missed you a couple times over the last month, but we're not going to let that happen anymore.
All right.
Bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.